Lance Addict. I brought a prop. Prop. You know, I've spoke a few times. I'm Lance Maddox. My home group is the HOW group of Narcotics Anonymous on Friday night in Virginia Beach. And we're part of the beach area of Narcotics Anonymous. And Brent has been a gigantic part of my recovery. I've been coming here since my kids were little. I've grown old coming up here. And it's always meant a lot to me because my clean date is in July. And usually I turn to my next year sometime right before the camp out. And tons of fond memories up here. And also, you know, some uncomfortable times as well. So I'm always honored to be asked to speak. I was always surprised when it happens, but always honored. And I want to try to bring a message of Narcotics Anonymous here today. Lately, I've been a little bit wondering what kind of message I have to bring, but the fact is that I have the message of Narcotics Anonymous. It came alive in me a long time ago. And I'm going to go through a little bit of my early story, how I actually got here, and then what Narcotics Anonymous has actually meant to me. I bring this book because it's a prop to me. I'm a garden variety junkie. I don't have any big fancy stories. I never had enough money to have a big fancy story, so all my stories were just getting one more to get through the next day, waking up wondering how I was going to get through the day, waking up hoping I wouldn't have to use again that day, and knowing that I would have to go use that day, and living a life of horror and desperation. And of course, that was at the end, because at the beginning, you know, I was just partying around. But a decade of misery and not being able to stop that. And it didn't really matter. I mean, I had a drug of choice just like anybody else, but it didn't matter what I was using, because I was around a lot of different people using a lot of different shit, and the desperation was exactly the same. And as I got into Narcotics Anonymous and ended up staying clean as a result of Narcotics Anonymous, I saw the depredations of every different kind of drug in here having the same impact on so many different people. And so the pain that the disease can bring doesn't really stop even after I got clean. The pain can be brought to me in any number of different ways. So, and that's part of my story. So I was running around being a junkie. My drug of choice took me to a place that I found out that the drugs that I like to do were sold in stores that were locked at night and had alarm systems and stuff like that. So I robbed drugstores for about a decade, pretty successfully, I would say, except that I always ended up in jail because I would never stop robbing them until I got arrested again. So my story has a lot to do with jail, and I have done jail time, but no significant jail time. I'm not really sure how that happened, expensive lawyers, whatever, but I was always able to do a little bit of time, get some community corrections or whatever it was, and get out and start running again. And no time when I got arrested, at no time did I ever think that it had anything to do with the fact that I like to get high. My intention when I got arrested was always to get high when I got out. Even though my life was desperate and horrible, I would never relate it to that itself. And so I would always get high when I got out again. And the end result was, sometimes I would be able to do a long run and other times a short run. But all the time, just chasing this empty result. Now, I say that because the reason that I like to get high, and I got to tell you, for some people they say it stopped working, but my drug of choice gave an absolute promised response and always delivered on that promise. It showed me early on how it was going to make me feel, and every time I did it, it made me feel that way. It just never allowed me to see the consequences of all of that, and it never allowed me to see just how short that good feeling was, and it never allowed me to see the ripple effect on the rest of my life. It only let me see that it was going to deliver on that promise. It was going to give me exactly what I expected, and that lure kept me using for a long time because I liked that feeling. And I'll talk all the time about not really being a feelings guy, and it isn't a feelings thing with me. Feelings come, feelings go, but I do have this control issue. I like to control it. So the deal was is that I don't know that I was really that worried about feeling this way or that way. I wasn't really that concerned with whether it was going to be a bad day or a good day or if I was happy or I was sad. I wanted that particular feeling, and I had control over that. If I could get enough money and if I could find the right guy, then I could feel that way absolutely for certain. And that gave me some sort of comfort somehow. Even though I was going to pay this gigantic price, at least I knew what I was going to get. I knew. It took the unknown out of my life. And that trapped me so securely in this prison that there was no way out. I lived a hopeless existence. That was it. So I started off, you know, liking that, getting high, doing this, doing that. And okay, and then all of a sudden I was in this hopeless existence. And I say hopeless because I saw no way out. I saw the end of my days doing the exact same thing. No difference. On through to the end, to eternity. Never was going to stop. It was never going to leave me alone. There was no way out. I had no program. Didn't even know about a program. I just knew that this was my lot. This is what I was going to do. This is the way I had to live. And that's very disheartening. Very disheartening. Even though I always had it telling me. Because I know it's my disease, and I have particular ways of looking at that. To me, this is a way more of a spiritual malady, and the disease concept is way too scientific for the thing that besets me, because it is not me. It besets me. It's in me, and it talks to me in my voice, and it made me do things that I didn't really want to do, and still does to this day, because it is alive and well. It's in the world, and it is inside of me, and it does not go away. It said that in the book that it would never be cured or anything like that. Well, I found that to be so true, that it is always there looking for another way to get me under its thumb again and to make me miserable so I can be under its control. I've never believed that the disease wants me dead. I don't think the disease has the power of life and death. That's God's hands. But I'll tell you this, my disease wants me in its grips and miserable the day God finally decides to take me out of here. And that's its mission, to make sure I am miserable. I believe that the disease feeds on misery, whether it's mine or anybody else's. So, but that's just my little weird stuff in my head. So I'm a criminal. That's what I do. I rob drugstores, and I do it a long time, and I don't get caught, and then I do it a couple times, and I get caught, and I go to prison. And in July 9th, 1990, I got arrested one more time. And something happened that night, I remember, and it never had happened to me before. I had a horrible habit, and it was miserable, and that last day I really didn't get enough to make me feel better, enough just to make me be able to go rob someplace. That was all I had. And so when they arrested me that night, it was the first time I have ever been grateful and verbally expressed that to the police officer, because I thanked him and I told him that he had rescued me, and he took me down to the holding cell, and I had to make that call because I'm married. I've been married before I got clean. I've been married the whole time I've been clean. I've been with my wife for 41 years, and we've been married for 33. Don't clap too soon. I'm just saying. Don't clap too soon. But I had to make that call. And it's that call I'd made before. The call from the holding cell saying, you know, they got me again. I'm in again. Now, this time I got a 7-year-old son. We have no money. Both of us worked all the time, but one of us couldn't support a household. And I had to make that call. I'm in again. Except this time was a little different, because this time was my fourth arrest and soon to be conviction for this same exact crime. And if you don't know about stuff like that, it's a habitual offender. And so I'm sitting in jail this time, realizing and knowing that I probably wouldn't get out while my son was still a child, and that I would not have a wife or a family when I got out, because I planned on being in there a while. It's just the way stuff works. So I'm in, and I come to grips with the fact that I'm probably not getting out of prison, but you know what? I also did not want to get high anymore. I did not want to be in that anymore. And a probation officer or somebody over the years had mentioned Narcotics Anonymous to me a time or two or something like that. So I asked my wife to get me a book. The prison that, or the jail I was in, there was no program, there's no H&I, there's nobody talking about recovery, but I wanted to get a book in there. I said, well, I'm here for a reason. I don't want to get high again. Maybe that shit will work. And she tried to get me a book in. She had it sent in through the channels. It came in with a hard cover on it. They didn't even make an NA soft cover at that time. And it came in a hard cover, and the jail rejected it because they wouldn't accept a hard cover book because I might use it as a weapon to beat somebody up with in the same block that I'm in. And there's 10 Bibles that are like 20 times bigger with hard covers, but nobody would beat you to death with a Bible. But a basic text, I will bash your head in. So she keeps trying because there's something about my wife. She is very persistent. She will make the call. She'll do what needs to. So she called again and again, and finally, this fine place, and it wasn't our service office. It was a freestanding capitalistic enterprise that sold basic text, but they cut the cover off of one of their books and sent it in to me free, and the jail finally let me have it. And that's why I bring this prop here, because this is my basic text with the cover cut off that I got, I think it was close to the end of July, middle of August in 1990. And the reason that I bring it as a prop and I call it a prop is because this book has been propping me up for 26 years. This book. And I'm not an emotional guy, but I got a little emotional about the basic text, especially this one, because my spiritual awakening didn't come from some fine person coming in and bringing me a meeting and telling me about Narcotics Anonymous. And that feeling, that transference of this message that comes from somebody that has Narcotics Anonymous, has brought it into themselves, that can actually bring that to somebody, actually carry the message. I didn't have any of that. But let me tell you, the people that wrote this book and the God that inspired them to write it had put that same power in the book, because I received the message of Narcotics Anonymous from the book of Narcotics Anonymous, not from another person. The power that are in the words that were in this book and me reading it, and also, you know, I had a spiritual awakening. Something happened that opened me up to the words that were in there and made me realize that I suffered from something that was bigger than me, that not only in my head was I in the grips of a power that was greater than me, I really was. There was a force besides me that had me in its grip and would not let go willingly. It would not let go willingly, and I, of myself, had no power, no way of making it let go. I could not do that. That was the spiritual awakening for me. I couldn't do it. That opened the door, realizing no amount of planning that I could make, no big expansive fucking idea could make it happen, that something bigger than me had to help me. Something stronger than the disease itself. And I wasn't that. It beat me every time, and it will continue to beat me every time. So I had this door opened to me, and right when it happened, because we talk about the steps all the time, and my sponsor is a knucklehead. I don't know if you guys know that, but he is. But him and I have this very clear understanding, or we have an agreement on the way the first three steps work for us, because I don't believe that they happen one at a time. I've never even seen that in anybody that I sponsor, anybody that comes into Narcotics Anonymous, that they happen one at a time, because it's the fact that you walk into a meeting because you think you might have a problem means you're working the first three steps right there, and that's what happened for me. I wouldn't be in a meeting if I didn't believe that Narcotics Anonymous would help, and I was willing to have them do it by showing up at all. And that, and when I read this book and I saw that, and that door opened up, and I had that awakening that I could not stop of my own free will, that it was going to take me to the end, and a door opened. I believed, just from reading this book, that Narcotics Anonymous could do it. Narcotics Anonymous was my answer. And once I believed that, I became willing to do what Narcotics Anonymous told me to do. But I'm in jail. But I had this spiritual awakening. I had faith in this program. I had the book. I had faith. I read. And I tried to practice the principles. So I was blessed. I was blessed. It wasn't just this spiritual awakening, because I'm doing this, pretty sure I'm going to be serving a ton of time. And the whole time, if I do end up staying clean, that I was going to be behind bars, didn't happen. I was blessed. I went to court. I got practically time served. I did a minimal amount, right under a year, my last time in, and I was released to the world. And this program was working in my heart while I was locked up. I was in there. It was in me. I was on it. I was loving it until about a week before I was to get released. And let me tell you, it came at me like a freight train. Not this desire to use, this certainty that it was going to be waiting for me on the outside, and it was going to take me just like it had always taken me before. And it was so strong and it was so powerful that it just blinded me to the fact that I was allied with this power that was so much greater than the disease of addiction. And it was just latching onto anything to get me, because I'll tell you something, the disease of addiction is scared to death of Narcotics Anonymous. It is so successful at taking us away from that disease and making us into productive members of society, and also people that can actually carry this message to other addicts and spread this thing and pull the plug right on that thing. It's petrified. So when it sees an opportunity, it grabs a hold of it, and it grabbed me. And I was blind to everything that I had heard to Narcotics Anonymous, and I knew that I was doomed when I got out. I knew it was going to be there waiting. My wife was going to pick me up, and we don't mesh well when it comes to using. Either I'm the bad guy or she's the bad guy. I'm going to say no. She's going to say yes. I'm going to say yes. She's going to say no. We're going to get high. So I was petrified, but she brought a meeting list with her. I got out about midnight. We got home to Virginia Beach about midnight on Thursday, so I'm going to go to a meeting the next day. I've got a meeting list of Narcotics Anonymous. I did not use the day I got out, and I'm going to the HOW group of Narcotics Anonymous on Friday night. And this would have been Friday night, February 8th, 1991. That's when I got out. So I'm going to the HOW group, and I got the meeting list, and I go out to the meeting, and there isn't a blessed soul in the parking lot. It is empty. There's nobody there. It's this nice big church, and I'm a criminal, and I'm thinking I should just break in and find out where the meeting is. I don't know. Because it said on the meeting list that it was there. It said it. If it says it, that's the way it should be. And I was incensed that they could put me at risk. Me. Because I believe in Narcotics Anonymous, and it should say what it's supposed to say. So I went home crying. Poor, pitiful me. Wanted to go to a meeting. It wasn't there. Narcotics Anonymous, my first try, just failed. Just this big fail. And then I looked at the meeting list again, and the HOW group was on right underneath of it a second time at a different church, and it had just not getting taken off. So I went to the meeting on Saturday night. It used to be at Woodstock in Arizona. I think it's at Princess Anne now, on Princess Anne Road. But I went there and I expressed my displeasure with Narcotics Anonymous and how did they fail me like this. And I could have got high last night with you guys, you know, and all that shit that I've heard probably a dozen times in the meeting since. So I could have got high, but not unless you really decided to go get high. And fortunately for me, I didn't. So I expressed that, and somebody pulls me up after the meeting and says, we make that meeting list, and if you would really like that meeting list to be correct, you could get involved and actually do some work on that thing. And I would say that sounded trite at the time, but that really meant something to me, because you got to remember, all my recovery came out of the book. I had no personal examples. I had no fellowship. I had nothing. I just had the book. And I don't know if you know this book talks about doing service to Narcotics Anonymous. It talks about it a lot. And so when they said that to me, I said, that's something that I could do. I could go over a list and make sure there's no mistakes on it or anything else like that. So that was my first introduction to service. And I I thank God for that today, because that is one of the cornerstones. There's a lot of cornerstones for me in my recovery. It is just basic stuff, like everybody knows. First and foremost, it is having a God in my understanding. But I didn't really have that when I first got here. So first, it was going to meetings. It's going to meetings a lot. It's going to meetings all the time. It's going to meetings regularly after you've been clean for decades, making sure that I show up, always show up, because if I don't stay engaged in Narcotics Anonymous, it will be taken from me. It will be taken away from me by the power of the disease that will have me on my own one more time. So I believe in staying engaged in Narcotics Anonymous. I have seen it work too many times to think anything else. And I remember, I'm just new. This is my first couple of meetings, and I've never been exposed to you guys at all. Just the you guys that wrote the book. And they were disembodied people. They didn't have any faults. They were all beautiful and handsome. And they all loved me, and of course, that's not the way it is in real life, although you guys are really beautiful and handsome, all of you, so. So I get the impact of the fellowship and how much of a difference that makes, because the book is great. The book gave me the program. The book gave me my spiritual awakening, and it changed my life to the point that it actually got me into a meeting. But it's the meeting and the gathering of those of us that have this faith in this thing that is bigger than the disease altogether, has a power when we gather together. It's a power greater than the disease, even more so than just the book, even more so than my faith in it. It's a power. And it always is there when I come in. I share about this. See, the bad thing is that there's people here that know me, and they've heard this shit so many times, they just want to probably blow their brains out. There's a guy with a gun right there. Right there. But there is a power, and one of the clearest examples of it is we're at the meeting, and the meeting's just opening up. You know, it's just getting ready to start, and it's madness in a meeting, especially some of the meetings, 70, 80 people, and it's just chaos. I mean, everybody's got a side conversation going. It's just this huge amount of sound in this little tiny room, and some dude with not even necessarily a strong voice says, "Welcome to such and such a meeting," or "Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous," and the hush that falls over the room at that time, because we're all about to be given something that has made it possible for us to not use that day, and it goes silent, and they ask somebody to read a reading. And when I was first clean, I sat on the edge of my chair, and I looked right at the person reading, and I listened to every word they said, and this went on for like a year. I was riveted by the readings. I thought it was the coolest shit. Didn't matter where I went. If I went out of town or anywhere else, we're all reading the same readings. Some people read with inflection and emotion, and other people are flatlined, but it's the words. It was the words carried in this group of people that believe in it, and it was just like, whoa, it would wash over me. So I have this real affection for the readings and what they mean and what they say. So I'm one of those guys that sits in this crowd at campouts and conventions, and my skin crawls when we do that shit to our readings. Now, I know it's all fun, and everybody's going to still do it anyway, probably even more now, but it gets under my skin, because I don't even really see it as disrespectful. I just think the words have power when they're put together a certain way. And there is power when we do that, because it's all about me. I'm self-centered. That shit helped me at the beginning. It set the stage for the meeting to start. And once the meeting got going, I got to hear people share their lives in there, share their solutions, share their pain, share their joy. And saw Narcotics Anonymous, the result of Narcotics Anonymous, the result of working the steps and all of the other suggestions, come alive in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. That's why it's first on the list to me, because I can work steps till the cows come home and never go to a meeting, and I ain't getting shit. I'm not getting shit, because it's watching people work and live those steps in real life that I see in the meetings that make it come alive to me. So meetings first. I had to get a sponsor, and I've been through a few sponsors. My first floated out the room on a cloud of religious zeal. That's what happened to my first sponsor. Know him and love him to this day, but still floated out. And I got out a sponsor that goes to Narcotics Anonymous, so I got my second sponsor. And I would say to date, John was my closest sponsor. I felt the most affinity. We did the most work. I got the most result. I got to say, I got the most result because during that time of my recovery, I was living and breathing Narcotics Anonymous. I was actually, in most areas of my life, really living by spiritual principles. I had grasped them. They were changing my life. And it was evidenced in the life that I lived. It was easy to see. And John died of pancreatic cancer, and he died clean. I got another sponsor, and he was a little more nervous about taking it on. And there are people in this room today that actually had him as their sponsor as well. And Stevie was a wonderful, heartfelt, compassionate, loving, strange dude. But a faith and a passion for Narcotics Anonymous that was just infectious and would grab a hold of a newcomer and just bring him in hard. And after about 6 or 7 years with Stevie, Stevie got sick and Stevie died of cancer clean. So now I got two sponsors that have died, and I go to ask my third sponsor, the knucklehead that I have today. And he's reticent to take the job because he's a little bit of a hypochondriac anyway, so he's probably sure he's going to die if I take him on. And I just told him what his odds. So I'm on this because I'm talking about sponsorship, and sponsorship is vital. And I asked Neil to take me on this time, and because I valued Neil's spiritual viewpoints, his way of coming at stuff, because I'm a cynic. I mean, I know and I believe in Narcotics Anonymous, and I know and I see the evidence of what it's done for me, but I am very cynical about a lot of stuff. So that cynicism makes it hard for me to embrace and practice certain things that will make my life better, that will give me a better conscious contact with my higher power. And that's what I was looking for at that time. And I was struggling because, you know, I just lost Steve, and there was just all this grief. And I'm thinking, who can I get? Because that gets to be a real problem sometimes, deciding who can I ask. And you know, he's just sitting next to me at the meeting one night, and I just said, well, I can just ask Neil. And so I did. And it's been a godsend to me, I would say, because we worked a lot of steps. But I'm telling you, we're getting to the bad part of my story here coming up. So sponsorship, working steps, the value of the steps. And that, like I said, the first three being happening for me all at once. Now, I had to, and I'm a big foundation guy because I know that those first three steps are the foundation of Narcotics Anonymous. I also know they happened to me all at once. It was a spiritual awakening. It was real. It was alive. But I still had to go through the work of Narcotics Anonymous to cement that foundation into place, because I'll tell you what, I'm building the rest of my life on that foundation. And if it isn't firm, if it isn't solid, if I am not clear on what it is that I'm doing, that is solid, that I suffer from the disease of addiction, that I am powerless over the disease of addiction, and that my life will be and is unmanageable a lot of times because of that disease of addiction, that I cannot beat it on my own, that I believe Narcotics Anonymous is a way for me to keep the disease at bay, and that I'm willing to let Narcotics Anonymous do that by doing what Narcotics Anonymous says. So that's my foundation. But I had to write it out to make sure it's clear, because as the years go by, stuff gets fuzzy in my head. I don't know about you guys, but it gets fuzzy in my head, and I start thinking that I'm in charge. And I really do think I'm in charge most of the time anyway. But it starts to get fuzzy. So that was important. And then going through the rest of the steps, you know, and I'm not going to run through them because everybody has a sponsor line. Everybody does things a certain way. But our book, when I did my first steps, we didn't have a step working guide. So you used the oral tradition that was passed down from sponsor to sponsee, and you did it. And doing the work was the example of doing the third step. I did the work. I looked at myself. I saw where I fell short. And I did 4 and 5, and I came up on this monster step called step 6. And it was, because everybody was talking about 4 and that, and it was like nothing to me. I was just like work. It's just write and share, write and share. But 6... With 6, man, I had to look at the shit. I'm clean. You know, I'm a couple years clean by now. And I am living, in my eyes, this shitty life. Even though it's nothing compared to what I was, I knew how I was acting. I especially knew what was going on in my head all the time. And so it was a struggle. And I talked about it. And I finally found a way through it. And the spiritual awakening I had as a result of step 6 carried me for a decade. I worked on through 12, but that 6 and 7, that spiritual awakening, gave me this acceptance of myself as a human, and that spread to everyone else in the world around me. Everybody was okay. Everybody is trying to do their best they can. Isn't anybody out there trying to fuck somebody else's life up or mess their kids up or screw somebody over? I just don't believe that's true. I believe in the goodness, the basic goodness of human nature. I know that we're here for a reason, and each and every one of us have a special way of carrying that goodness to another person, and it made my life so peaceful and good and nice, and it made it so much easier to get through the day, to be around people and say, man, we are all the same. I might not suffer from the same defects as you, but I suffer equally from the defects that beset me. So who am I to judge you for being a dickhead in that area? Because I'm not, but I'm double the dickhead in this area. So what? Who am I casting stones at? And it made my life peaceful. It did. It made it possible for me to accept others for what they were and to move on through the steps. So it was a great and good period in my life. I was happy in my life. My kids were growing up. Things were just sailing along, and life was good. My son, my oldest son, the apple of my eye, fell from this pedestal that I had him on because he was my personal hero for most of my life. And he fell, and all this foundation and stuff I was working on, all of this stuff, it just like fell apart, and I started making bad choices, bad decisions that would impact not just my life, hurt and damage other people. And that was like 15 years ago. So it was a very hard time, but I stayed engaged in Narcotics Anonymous. First, I didn't get high, and you know, I hate hearing that. Well, at least I didn't get high. Yeah, I murdered 100 people and I wrecked everything, but at least I didn't get high. At least I didn't use, and granted, that's the promise that we get. We ain't going to use, but I think in the middle of that, we're supposed to actually be a productive member of society and leave the world a better place than we found it, than I found it. That was what I thought. So I started being pretty hard on myself because I wasn't leaving it a better place. I was hurting, especially those that meant the most to me. But I didn't use. I stayed involved in Narcotics Anonymous. I did service. I worked steps. I worked through it. And my life turned back to God. I was back in the light again, and recovery was good. And I was very happy, and I did a lot of service during that time and felt the connection to my humanity and to the people that I travel this with. And then the years go by. And like I say, I have control issues. I suffer from this thing that makes me think that I'm always right, and that I know everything, and an unwillingness to know or to acknowledge when I am being delusional, and add to that my basic dishonesty. You know, we talk about those big spiritual principles: honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And if I fall short in an area, it's honesty. Because anytime I get to a place, and I am in a place in my life that it starts to get a little funky, and I start thinking in my head that this would be better or that would be better, whoa, honesty is out the window. My sponsor isn't going to know. My friends aren't going to know. I'm not going to tell anybody because I want to do what I want to do. And damn the world around me. And I'm not sitting there in my head thinking this. What I'm sitting there and thinking is, this is the right thing to do. I know that if I tell somebody, they'll tell me it isn't, but I know it's the right thing to do. This is the spiritual path. This is what God has laid out for me. Otherwise, I wouldn't want to do it. How many times did the disease tell me that lie when I was just, this is my path. You're supposed to be a junkie. That's what you're supposed to do. And so it does that. And it's done to me several times. And that's why we're clapping here earlier. That's why it's not like that. Because, you know, I've been clean a long time. And I'm not talking about kind of being clean. I've been involved in Narcotics Anonymous at a very basic and deep level for the whole time I've been here. The entire time. I have never detached. I've never gone through periods of not going to meetings. I've never not had a sponsor. Any of that stuff. I've always, and it's a pride thing. I mean, I'm just boasting. That's all I'm doing. But the deal is that didn't mean a lot to me. That's what I built my life on. That's how I saw myself. I'm Lance. I'm in recovery. This is what I do. This is how I am. And I lived in this fantasy that I am this thing that I'm not. Yeah, I'm just like the rest of you guys. I go to meetings. I work steps. I lie. I cheat. I steal. I tell the truth. I'm honest. I do good things. I help people. That's right. I'm defective. I'm a defective human, and I am going to do defective things. And there's no excuse for it. There's no rationalization for it, but it's a fact. I have yet, in Narcotics Anonymous, to meet somebody that doesn't do fucked up shit. But that said, you can do things that really impact and it's a painful thing. So the good thing is that Narcotics Anonymous is still here. It's still here. And I can stay engaged. And I can apply the principles that I was taught in Narcotics Anonymous from the very get-go. And that is to rely on my support group. To be honest once again. To talk to people. To reapply myself to my steps. To reattach with my sponsor at a deeper level. And really to find a connection with a power greater than me by opening my mind and erasing this cynicism with the world that's around me. So that is always my mission, and that's what I'm on. Now I have another group that I go to regularly, and a bunch of the kids, I call them kids because, well, one of them was my kid, actually, started this little men's meeting, and I have no idea how long ago it's been. It's got to be almost 10 years now. I don't know. But it has become, and I love the Hub Group of Narcotics Anonymous. I love it. It has been my home for, 25 years or since I got out of prison, and I love it. But this little meeting, this little men's meeting, we read the Living Clean book, and the stuff that is shared by men in a room when there are no girls around is a little bit different. Now, granted, before the meeting starts, it is the biggest trash talking room you'd ever want to see. And there isn't a bit of recovery in any of that stuff. But once we start sharing in there, and we don't have to worry about what the girls will think or what or anything, the stuff that is shared in there has changed my life. And our new book has changed my life. It has helped me have some insight into things that were just scooting right over the top of my head for years. So I do love that book. And I love it because it's about the journey continuing. And it does continue as long as I stay here and I stay engaged in Narcotics Anonymous. I know the theme this year is finding a way to live. Is that right? New way to live. Not finding one. We already have one, I guess. And like I say, I have this sponsor. I think I said he was a knucklehead. But I only say that because I have this deal with other guys, and I am going to, if I like you, I am going to say shitty stuff about you to you. And that's the way I'm comfortable, and fortunately, my friends haven't completely rejected me because of it, so they must be okay with it at some level. But him and I have always talked about that part, you know, of our promise. You know, stop using, lose the desire to use, and finding a new way to live. And how often, and I already talked about this a bit, we focus on the stopping using and losing the desire to use and gloss over this finding a new way to live. And the fact is that a lot of times in my recovery, I am not finding a new way to live. I am living so deeply and entrenched in the old patterns, in the using patterns, short of actually getting high and robbing drugstores, those same patterns of secrecy, self-deceit, self-hate, all of that stuff sitting right inside of me. And that's not a new way to live. That's not the promise of the steps. The promise of the steps is that finding a new way to live. And the great thing and the real hope shot is that Narcotics Anonymous is the answer to that. And it has given it to me over and over, because I can be relieved of 100 defects the same day that I practice and act out on 100 defects, because God never stops relieving me of defects. As long as I allow it to happen, my God takes care of me in that way. And as long as I stay involved in Narcotics Anonymous, that will continue to happen. The process works. I can find a new way to live through. I can get through whatever damage that I've caused, because I'm alive. And with life, there is hope. And Narcotics Anonymous is my hope. That's what I'm going to share.